fight. It's morphin' time. Dragon Sword.
This is Jason David Frank, and you are listening to This Week in Geek, and it's morphin' time.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to the Nerd News Network. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. It is Friday, April 11th, 2014. And we're coming to you a little bit later in the day because, well, I actually haven't slept a whole hell of a lot this week. In fact, I've had two 40-hour days. I've slept maybe 15 hours this week, grand total. It's not looking good. But I'm here to entertain you, the people, as you go into your Friday nights, where hopefully you are out there having fun, adventure, getting laid, or perhaps saving the world from various forms of supervillainy. So, on the site this week, we're supposed to have a prototype with me and Jamie. Unfortunately, Jamie's schedule has actually just been really screwed up this week. In fact, probably about as much as mine has been when it comes to sleeping. So he's been all over the place. I'm hoping to get him in studio next week. If not, we'll record over Skype, get a couple of different prototypes done. Also, me and Steve Megatron are going to be doing a Future Imperfect next week. And me and Blair are actually recording the long-awaited Quest Your Girls commentary for Last Exit to Ponyville with a couple of special guests that I worked with at Canterlot Con this past November. We're going to be recording with them before one of the guests actually moves out to BC, I think. So be looking for that at the end of next week, I think. So anyway, lots of stuff to cover this week. We're going to be talking about Hagfish Slime, the Ultimate Warrior, Time Cop, What is a Foxo Galaxy, and we're going to be talking about He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. Well, let's start this thing off on kind of a serious note. This past weekend was WrestleMania and the Wrestling Hall of Fame ceremony, and that's where they inducted the Ultimate Warrior, aka James Helwig, and he was on Monday Night Raw this past week talking about how he wants to be remembered, his legacy, and basically gave a really passionate promo out there in the ring. First time he'd been back in like 16 years or something like that. And then on Tuesday, he passed away very suddenly in front of his hotel in Arizona. No one is quite sure what happened with him, although TMZ, so take this with what you will, was reporting he seemed seriously off on the weekend. He looked really sweaty. He looked really kind of stressed. He just looked like he was in a lot of pain, according to eyewitnesses. Another warning sign, this is from their article, and I'm going to quote here. Another warning sign, when Warrior did a signature rope shake after his big speech on Monday Night Raw, he looked weak and people around him noticed. One eyewitness put it this way: we all felt like he looked like he was going to blow a gasket. It was pretty easy to see. And a lot of people are talking about the speech he gave on Monday Night Raw seemed almost as if he knew he was going to go. Like he knew his ticket was about to be punched. And it's unfortunate because this guy is an icon, and I want to share my memories of the Ultimate Warrior with you. When I was in grade school, me and my friend Wayne Richards, we used to enjoy wrestling. Now, I was a huge Hulkamania. Hulkamania ran wild in my family, as it did for many, many years. And I wasn't a huge fan of the Ultimate Warrior, but I remember this specifically. This was after WrestleMania 6, I think, when they had the big Warrior-Hogan match. I remember me and Wayne arguing out on the playground by the monkey bars, saying, Ultimate Warrior sucks. No, Hulk Hogan sucks. And it just went back and forth. I'm like, oh yeah, well why is he better? Because he's got face paint and look at him, he's crazy. And I just, that's one of the huge things that I remember about the Ultimate Warrior, is how intense this man was. But so the Ultimate Warrior passes away at the age of 54. Although, I'm glad he got to mend the bridges that he did. He'd made up with Vince McMahon. He'd made up with WWE, despite being basically cast out for a number of years. And the fans were excited to see him back. Actually, Noah Antweiler, a.k.a. the Spoony One, and Lewis Lovehog, a.k.a. Linkara, actually did a memorial stream for him on Monday night. I'll actually link over to the Spoonie Experiment's memories of the Ultimate Warrior. And it was cool because they went through the Ultimate Warrior comic books. They did, where Spoonie did this impression of him in this review. He did the Ultimate Warrior in, he did this impression of the Ultimate Warrior in a review, which was called Santa with Muscles, which was a Hulk Hogan Christmas movie that made like less than $200,000 in theaters. And it's actually considered one of the worst Christmas movies of all time. But yeah, it was, didn't expect to see that, with the Ultimate Warrior. So I'm glad he got a chance to make his peace, and I feel really bad for his family and his daughters that he leaves behind. And definitely the entire WWE universe is definitely feeling it. I presume they'll probably mention something tonight on SmackDown. So I guess we'll find out in probably about 45 minutes as of this recording. So, God rest ye soul, Ultimate Warrior. But you know what Heaven's main event is now? It's going to be the Ultimate Warrior versus Macho Man Randy Savage with St. Peter as the referee. So you really couldn't ask for too much more. So moving on to other news that happened around the world of geek this week. This one actually just happened about an hour or so down the road from me. This one's coming out of the University of Guelph. And scientists are starting to understand the miracle of hagfish slime. You might be wondering, well, what the hell is a hagfish? A hagfish kind of looks like an eel, but the article from IO9 describes it perfectly. It looks like a coil of fake dog shit, this thing, or as they described it, naked zombie skin tube sock is another way to describe it. Now, it has this really weird ability where it can take a teaspoon of its slime that it can generate and can render a 5-gallon bucket into basically a big bucket of slime. And the cool thing is, this stuff can be used to choke predators. Now, you might be wondering, well, what's the big freaking deal? So this slime contains tens of thousands of very strong, very thin protein-like threads. So if you stretch these fibers out and let them dry, they kind of resemble spider silk. And they think that the proteins in hagfish slime can be used to create super fibers that could be used in everything from bulletproof vests to artificial tissues. And it's very cool. So what they've done, Professor Douglas Fudge over at the University of Guelph, he's the professor of integrative biology. Basically, what they did is they used light, an electron microscope, and 3D imagery, and they looked inside the thread that actually makes the slime to see how these proteins are coiled and how they're actually organized. Actually, a really cool video. I'm actually going to post it. So he's quoted as saying, "For the first time, we have the technology to study the morphology and the structure of threads in the cell." And what they found is that these threads change in size, but they remain stored in a way that they can be uncoiled without tangling, reaching up to 15 centimeters in length. It's pretty amazing considering that one of these threads is the equivalent of a rope that is 1 centimeter in diameter and 1.5 kilometers long. This study provided information about how the thread coils and fills the cell as it grows. And these results led us to some very strong clues about how the threads are actually made, and figuring that out is the ultimate goal. Slime vests. I don't know, I mean, just looking at this stuff is absolutely disgusting, but I kind of want to touch it because it looks like Ghostbuster slime. That's the best way I can actually describe this stuff. It looks like Ghostbuster slime or what might come off of the alien in, you know, Aliens, right? That's what it looks like, but still, disgusting shit, but just utterly fascinating. So moving on to other news going on this week. This one, I've got two entertainment stories this week. So we're going to start with the first one. So back in February, it was revealed that the guy who directed G.I. Joe Retaliation, which was one of my favorite movies last year, John M. Chu, had stepped away from the big screen version of Masters of the Universe, and they're looking for a new guy. So they're looking at a guy who was involved with Kick-Ass 2, Jeff Jeff Wadlow. And they're actually, now this guy's been signed on to rewrite the script that was done by Terry Rossio, the guy who also co-wrote The Lone Rangers. Now, they're also looking around to see who else they could possibly get involved with this. They're also looking at a guy named Mike Cahill, who did iOrigins. And Wadlow is also a guy who got tapped to write an X-Force screenplay for them over at Fox. So this comes courtesy of Superhero Hype. I don't think this guy would be a terrible choice to actually do Masters of the Universe, because I thought Kick-Ass 2 was actually a lot of fun. And having him do this, it would depend on how they want to take this. I think if they followed closer to, say, the DC comic adaptation of Masters of the Universe, I might actually be halfway interested. I actually have read the first, like, 6 or 7 issues of Masters of the Universe, and I think DC versus He-Man just wrapped up. And I would be very interested in this. In fact, I'm actually kind of thinking about getting back in to He-Man, because last year, unfortunately, when I got into a bit of trouble, I had to sell my vintage Castle Grayskull, complete with the box. Which, my God, I'm kicking myself in the ass for that, because I paid a really good price for it. I got my money back for it, but it still hurts. It's one of those playsets I wish I'd never given up. And since I can never go back to my like parents' house, I'm pretty sure it's gone. And it would cost me so much to replace all the parts to this. So it's my goal in the next year to eventually replace Castle Grayskull. But anyway, He-Man, it's one of those things that I found incredibly fascinating over the years. And I'm actually a huge fan of the Dolph Lundgren run, featuring a very young... the guy who played Tom Paris, whose name completely... Duncan McNeil. He played Tom Paris in Voyager. And a very young Courtney Cox. I think that was her first movie, actually. We're in that. And Frank Langella as Skeletor, which is completely ridiculous. But I thought Dolph Lundgren played a good He-Man. So I'd be very curious to see if they adapt the more fantastic elements, like bringing in Battle Cat. Hopefully they'll bring in Teela and Man-at-Arms. I would love to see them do an adaptation of Ram Man. As for bad guys, I'd love to see, obviously, Beast Man, Skeletor, Evil Lynn. I'm trying to think who else. You know who I'd love to see? I'd love to see them bring Stinkor. I don't know why. Or Moss Man. Or that dude with the sucker arms, whose name I completely friggin' forget. But man, I used to love He-Man figures when I was a kid. I wish I still had them, too. My favorite was this guy who was yellow and he could spin around. I think it was called Cyclone or Tornado. Something stupid like that. Something very generic. Something you would very much remember, because all the He-Man names are always a stupid pun or something. So He-Man, I'm looking forward to seeing you on the screen. Hopefully sooner as opposed to later. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Keeping up with entertainment news... I love Jean-Claude Van Damme. In fact, I have a like half wood right now for him. I think he's an amazing martial artist. He was one of my favorite actors of the late 1990s. Hi, Ayla. How are you? You just like getting petted? Sorry, Ayla's deciding to come in and join me for the nerd news. So anyway, one of my favorite movies of 1994 was Time Cop. And Time Cop, if you don't know, was Jean-Claude Van Damme, and he's part of the Time Enforcement Commission, and it's up to him and TEC agents, not TTC, to go back and prevent rogue elements from going back and changing history. Like, the movie opens up with people going back in time and robbing a Confederate gold shipment with, like, Uzis and shit. And then another one, the guy goes back to 1930s to take advantage of the Depression, and eventually he gets thrown out a window because he has to die for time crimes or something. But Jean-Claude Van Damme cannot go back in time to prevent the death of his wife. And you're also never supposed to touch yourself in the past, because the same matter can never occupy the same space. And it turns out there's this bad guy named Senator McComb, I think. And he's played by the now passed away Ron Silver. And anyway, time shenanigans ensue. It's a very cool movie. Actually, a really shitty NES game based on it, too. So anyway, The guys behind Journey 2, The Mysterious Island, have been tapped to write the script for this. And the guy who's going to produce it is Mark Schmugger. And he was behind We Steal Secrets, the story of WikiLeaks, and the Spectacular. Now, it's going to be produced by Mike Richardson of Dark Horse, the company that actually produced the comic that the movie was actually based on. And they're going to try and go for a more realistic approach this, and they're actually comparing it to Looper. Now, the guys who are actually writing this are actually working on a third Journey movie, a MacGyver feature film, and a remake of The Monster Squad by Fred Decker. I don't think this could be terrible, but I want them to get a half-decent budget. The thing is, with all these remakes, it's going to be kind of like RoboCop in the regards, is it necessary? But I really did like Looper. I really did. I thought it was actually really cool. So, depending on how they approach this, I think it actually might be halfway decent and actually kind of cool. I would love to have a Jean-Claude Van Damme cameo, but it probably won't happen. Because if they do want to take it more serious, they're not going to bother with a cameo with him. I wish I could remember the name of Jean-Claude Van Damme's character. Hopefully they'll still share the name, or maybe the time pod thing where they launched it down this huge railway track thing. But yeah, I guess we'll just have to wait and see whenever that comes out. And of course, my science story of the week that I love science and I love space. So this week, scientists found something really cool. There's actually a tiny galaxy circling our galaxy, and it's called the Seg-1 Dwarf Galaxy. You might be wondering, well, what's the big deal? This galaxy may actually be one of the first left over from when the universe was actually born. You might be wondering, well, how the hell is that possible? Well, when they look at the stars, or they look at some of the data they're getting from Seg-1, it contains fewer heavy elements than any other galaxy known, which implies this object stopped evolving almost 13 billion years ago. And you look at the size of this galaxy, and it's only a few hundred stars. Compare that to a few hundred billion in our Milky Way. So, research led by Anna Freebell of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology collected detailed information related to the elemental composition of the six brightest of Seg-1 stars using the Las Campus Observatory, Magellan Telescopes in Chile, and the Keck Observatory in Hawaii. And it turns out these stars are almost exclusively made up of hydrogen and helium and contain trace amounts of heavier elements such as iron. No other galaxy studied holds so few heavy elements, making Seg-1 the least chemically evolved galaxy known. And that's important to remember because stars that are born now contain things like iron and other heavy elements. And, you know, basically, it changes how supernovas go off. And it's really, really complicated. To get into, and it's something that I understand, but I don't know whether I can explain well to you. So I'm going to read a quote from this, and then I'm actually going to link the article so you can find out a little bit more about this. So Seg-1 is so ridiculously metal poor that we suspect at least a couple of the stars are direct descendants of the first stars ever to blow up in the universe. And this says Evan Kirby of the University of California, and he's one of the study's co-authors of this. So that's really cool. The fact that we may have found something from the very early universe, and it makes more questions happen. Like, well, why did this stop? One of the things that they talk about in the article is the epoch of reionization. And basically, when the universe was born, everything was so hot that certain processes that we know couldn't happen. So things had to cool down so we could get basically atoms and electrons and all sorts of other crazy shit for it to happen. So the fact that this could be a primal galaxy, that's really, really cool. And the fact that this galaxy hasn't changed for essentially 13 billion years, and there are even stars. I think there's one It's in the Milky Way. I know that for sure. And it's called the Methuselah Star. And it's older than possibly the recorded universe. And they don't know how that's possible. It's like a red dwarf, I think, or something like that. Or maybe it's a brown dwarf. I don't know. But yeah, look it up. Look up the Methuselah Star. Incredibly cool stuff. You also want to look up something really neat. Look up Wolf-Rayet stars, especially WR-104, if you want to just see some other really cool stellar stuff that you may not have necessarily known about. So that's pretty much all I got to talk about this week on the Nerd News Network. Like I said, sorry guys, I really should have recorded this later in the day, but my sleep schedule being what it is, it just didn't happen. Some really cool news this week. You only have a couple of more days to do this, so I really encourage you to go do this. If you're a fan of These Warriors Are Terrible, there actually is a thread on Reddit right now, on Reddit GIFs. You can sign up for the Tabletop RPG Gift Exchange. And the person I'm exchanging with, I doubt they're listening, I'm giving them a shit ton of D&D 1st edition and 2nd edition books. Sort of, here is our history. This is where role-playing started-ish. And I really hope they appreciate it, because I think a couple of the books I'm giving them are actually really rare. I think I'm actually giving them one of the books that has the original Cthulhu mythos in it, back before they lost the license to Chaosium for deities and demigods. It's not the book in the best condition, but still, I think it's really cool. I really hope this person appreciates it. But yeah, go check it out. I'll link it in the description. Also, hope you guys are listening to my Neon Genesis Evangelion Paradise Lost campaign we did using GURPS 4th edition. Really, really proud of that one. Unfortunately, I don't know if I mentioned this one. This is the campaign that's actually cost me the most. My backpack was either lost or stolen. Though luckily, a friend of the show, Cam Dunn, replaced my GURPS 4th edition books, but I lost my GURPS Ultra Tech, my GURPS Cthulhu Punk, and my GURPS Hellboy, which I had to help design the Ava module. And another guy contacted me on Twitter, and I think his name is Lewis, wants me to help him develop an Ava module for GURPS. So that's really cool, that the fact that we're inspiring people to go do this. So anyway, guys, I really hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. I'm going to go watch SmackDown now. But hopefully you guys will have a wonderful weekend. Look out next week for all sorts of cool stuff on the site. I think we got a brand new Beyond the Gauntlet coming up on Monday. So keep it locked here to thisweekingeek.net. I know I will, because, hey, I help run this show. So until next time, my friends, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. I'll catch you guys again right here on thisweekingeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show.
So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
You gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my God, whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by PronoBozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.